Thank you. This is side B of tape one, and we continue on to our scribing of Wednesday, May 27th, 1992, day 285. And this is going to be a continuation on the subject, the divine plan, and those places in between, as just a bit of identification. I believe to open this, we will speak of the infinite. It is the infinite of this journey which is sought and also is achieved. And that's regardless of the direction thought might have laid forth. For all is but cycles ending in the infinity of the whole, the circle of infinity, if you would remember and consider it. The journey will spiral always until such time as thought projection will take you into the sequence of events which allows for learning and passage. Each experience and portion will add to the whole until the circle does become one. So let's look briefly at the symbolic circle, that round thing called a circle, which can well indicate an ending or a beginning of the circle of experience and expression manifest in the life stream of the fragment in expression, projected always and forever outward, and then returning honed and learned in knowing into oneness once again. A sequence. Chilas, it's a sequence of events, of action, a progression. It's not a time, in quotes, it's a segment, it's not a space, in quotes, a segment, a portion. In this wondrous connection of the circle to itself, oh, you can perceive, oh, perhaps a destiny in which the world is gone, even. Try to perceive the world being gone as you come into the oneness with Creator, into this wondrous voidance of all time and all space. All will be at peace and rest without any perception of impact upon the blessed wholeness, the allness of being, simply being. Even the music's gone. But there won't be perception of such. For that which replaces the senses of music, for instance, is that which becomes the music itself. And it needs no hearing with physical ears. It is. There is only infinite reality, which is symbolized by the circle of endless time, or again referred to as a circle of infinity. And it might more brilliantly and perfectly, in its coming into conclusion, to again move into experience, because the sacred circle of infinity, which is the Christness, it is the fulfilling again into Godness. So it is called the sacred circle of infinity, or the Christ circle in the Aboriginal languages and interpretations, which I think speaks well beyond organized religion. For as I spoke to a special friend lately, when asked what was the matter with organized religions, that there were no perfect ones left. And I said, because they are organized. And man comes into organizing them the way he wants them organized. God is order. God is order. He's already organized. So when man tampers with the order, that's what's the matter with it. But let's look again briefly at this symbolic circle. As you move into this infinite reality of endless time, you move into what teachers have called Tao, or Nirvana, whatever the term might be for this state of being. It'll be according to the communication and intent and definition from one place to another, one race to another, one creed to another, but it all means the same. The illusion of the world and the illusion of the self in the world both come to an end. Isn't that interesting? I didn't say the world comes to an end. I didn't even say the self comes to an end. But I said the illusion of the world and the illusion of the self in the world both come to an end. Only this infinite reality remains. This integration represents conquest of the world and all its illusions. When the world is conquered, guess what? It simply fades away. Only truth remains. Nameless truth, formless, limitless. Truth to be discovered only by inward experience and dwelling with the oneness within and the knowing of the mystery of that which before had only been symbols. May the truth rest gently upon you ones and your being, that you find your way a little more clearly as we unfold this wondrous, wondrous time of times, space of space, infinite cycle into reality, out of that bungling unreality. But it requires knowledge. So what is it for which you're searching? What are you after in this journey of yours? You look for truth, knowing, and ultimately returning into wholeness within and unto source. Always leaving that which is truth for those generations to come. Even if there be no generations to come, that is not for your consideration. Always truth must be left for generations to come. It's always through enforced ignorance that man is conquered by this adversary of God. Enlighten men, and you have no adversary. Truth and knowledge gives freedom, and it gives the long-sought freedom as the goal into eternity and into infinite balance in harmony with all things. So what has happened through the ages that man has tampered and destroyed to keep from the people created in such perfection, intelligent God reason? Ah, the great stores of knowledge were destroyed. Then they were rewritten. Then they were changed to serve the power hungry and the rulers of the physical experience. So let's put it in other words, evil for only physical human has created evil. Because, precious ones, all other expressions simply are. They're creations. So where does this never-ending story, where does it take up memory patterns, which allows for insight? Well, I choose to reveal that which can be connected with your own oral mythology, so you can go back and make some connections with the closing of cycles. The truth must be left for the next sequence of experience, so that in the ending of each cycle, truth can come again, as the hosts are always sent with the messengers in order to prepare for the coming again of information long stored against the day of recovery, to give confirmation and understanding in measured input, which allows belief and comprehension, for man cannot longer stand shock against his density in manifestation. You've moved too far into the darkness, too far away from your very substance of the photon expression as light. Sounds simple? Well, in consideration of what I've told you about the photon belt, it should not be complicated to you. This is what light is. And therefore, you have to understand that the photon expression of self will be a lighted projection or manifestation. Let me word it this way, because since my scribe and I often move back into experiences upon which to bring understanding within our own connection, I have a tendency to journey back in the memory of those times of Egyptians, where there can be recognition of energy form recognized as Aton, A-T-O-N, the one light, the one source, the great light, the all light. So we go to the feeble beginnings, so that recognition of truth can begin to build upon itself. And yet constantly must come the testing of readiness of the species and the civilization, as experiencing in the density of placement in the cause of learning. It has always been the thrust of the elite would-be gods to destroy and change truth, to deceive in order to maintain power. It's always worked. He never even has to change his plan. It always works. You fall prey. You are willing. You line up for these luxuries, for these satisfactions to your senses. Why do you think that places such as the great libraries, such as that of the Alexandrian Library, were destroyed? Why would they find it necessary in these elite circles to get rid of information? Do you think that all the information stored by those elite rulers of that day were pure? Of course not. But within could be deciphered from deduction, logical deduction, what was actually going on. And in all writings, there is truth, do you see? And you cannot afford to allow truth and knowing and knowledge to be held by the masses of people. First, you must get rid of truth and knowledge, a good education in truth, to continue to be able to control. So when we talk about the wonders the great wonders of something like the Alexandrian Library. We have to look at that very closely. Because you have to consider, were those writings true? Or were they simply a place of scholars? Did those writings simply project opinions and perhaps already tampered documentation, which would only actually pull mankind further from his direction of the lighted path? Interesting to think about it and to think upon that which awed and awes the world are usually the imperfections of ego-oriented man. So what happened at Alexandria exactly? Let's look at it for a minute. Let's look at the setting and see if perhaps there was yet much to be desired in the writings, either before or after the destruction of scrolls and sheets of scribblings. Writing usually is only a method of setting down misinformation. Hear me? Misinformation. To remind the readers of the lies and to reinforce the same. Truth abides in the memory and can never be completely destroyed. This is why the oral traditions, even with symbols misunderstood by the masses, hold the actual truth of evolvement and the connections with that infinite eternal experience. So let's look at the destruction of the Alexandrian Library. As is historically expressed, let's look at what happened at Alexandria, because I think you're going to find that you have been a little bit misled historically, because you see there were two great libraries and there were four great assaults on these libraries. But we'll go with what is generally acknowledged, and that is that the ancient Egyptians possessed an extraordinary knowledge of both arts and sciences. Well, I won't quarrel with that, but I think that as we go along, you'll see that there's a possibility that it was not as presented, because their priests and philosophers were noted among the most scholarly of men, not necessarily the most honorable. And therefore, I don't say knowledgeable. I use the term scholarly for that very reason. I go right along with historical speculation, but when you look at the truth of it, you're going to find they were scholarly and not knowledgeable. The architecture of the Egyptians certainly amazed and awed the world for centuries. And their projected wisdom in chemistry, anatomy, medicine, and astronomy, for instance, were certainly not any less amazing. So how could it be? Even to limited perception, one has to realize that something came prior to this wisdom, in quotes, of our scholars. Back during and under the dynasty of the Ptolemies, the city of Alexandria became an actual Mecca for the gathering in of these so-called scholars. The studious of all nations congregated to enjoy unparalleled opportunities for mental self-improvement. And perhaps this is when massive mental disinformation really began to get a strong hold on civilization. I believe you could probably go right back to that time and almost pinpoint it, when disinformation began to flow in a very organized, orderly manner to the masses. But you had, at that time, a gathering of poets and historians. Oh, the philosophers were everywhere. and the dramatists began to assemble. And in the city of the Ptolemies, I say Ptolemies because you who want to look up this data, somewhere else it is spelled P-T-O-L-E-M-I-E-S. And it could be a little hard to find if you don't realize there's a P in front of that T. Well, these ones who gathered in to this city of the Ptolemies gathered there largely to consult the vast libraries. These libraries had been accumulated by the pharaohs of that illustrious time. I'd note here that the only pharaoh of the time period who was worthy of any note at all, in my opinion, was the one called Akhenaten. So I have to say, therefore, if the libraries were allowed and filled with great wisdom, it undoubtedly was the wisdom chosen by the ruler in power at the time, and by simply deductive reasoning, it was certainly not of God in its intent. Knowledge is just like a magnet. It draws more knowledge to itself. And even if it is erroneous input, this will happen. And so as you moved along by the second century before the so-called Christian era in the city of Alexandria, it had become a veritable metropolis of books. Its libraries are referred to in ancient documents as the glory of the world, the axis of the intellectual universe. The misinformation in my prior words is enough to make you barf. It is so foolish. Let me repeat what they say. Its libraries are referred to in ancient documents as the glory of the world. I'm sure that's true. They certainly would have been referred to in that way, especially after destruction and after the stories were rewritten. And they also called it the axis of the intellectual universe. Well, I am not going to ever say that being intellectual is being intelligent. So to add to that, numerous private libraries collected by specialists in various departments of learning came into being. And then, of course, you had the secret collections written in the hieratic glyphs, if you will, hieroglyphs of the priests. There were two immense public collections. So let's speak of them a little bit. The largest one of these was the Brucium. That's going to be pronounced as many ways as you have scholars to pronounce it. I'm going to continue to call it the Brucium, which itself formed a branch of the National Museum of Antiquities, as it's referred to. And it alone contained, some 490,000 papyri and vellums, tablets, a lot of inscriptions magnificently arranged in the myriads of niches and wings of a great, great rotunda-like gallery. Can you picture how much more vastly disinformation can flow this day in your experience? Imagine anyone with a personal computer can flush through waste at incredible speeds, precious ones, and completely bury the mind of man in total garbage, or worse, as has happened, deceive man into believing he must have interpreters and go-betweens, authorities other than self, and saviors. Oh, yes, let's have our saviors. To take away your burden and save the soul. What a load to dump upon another. What a cop-out of self-responsibility. But that's what's been laid forth for you. To deceive you into believing you must have interpreters and go-betweens. You have to somehow have authorities other than yourself. You can't make a decision. You're not allowed a decision. And always you've got to have a savior. And you can be bound by that in total fear. You've got to have this particular savior or you're lost. Think about that very carefully, because it affects the very rest of your journey, which is infinite journey. You're not going to be able to tell where the circle ends and where it begins. For it's a never-ending story, a never-ending play. Well, let's go back and look at the second smaller public collection, which was devoted almost exclusively to obscure forms of knowledge, and I would guess, therefore, probably of greater practical value than the large Brookhill. It was contained in what was called the Temple of Serapis. This was the patron deity of the Ptolemies. Don't you find that interesting? They had their own special god, these Ptolemies. These ones that wrote and had these great libraries. This particular building called the Serapium housed some 42,800 rolls. And they went a little farther in their care. They preserved their rolls and scrolls in fireproof containers. And these you would have, if you came upon them, would think you had found a bunch of buckets with some tight-fitting lids. But it was effective. Well, the private collections brought the total number of treasures in Alexandria to probably a number exceeding 1 million documents. Well, you can have more than that in a simple little county library or municipal library. That many documents are put out in a given day. Oh, millions. I can't even begin to relate to it, since you have computer capability. But back then, it was a feat of mightiness. I mean, this was really an accomplishment. And I can't respect that, even if I can't respect the purity and intent or content of those documents. It was that the private collectors brought the total compilation into a single place. And therefore, you were dealing without copies of anything. So this was a massive, truly a massive accomplishment. But it's difficult to compare this ancient collection with any modern library, anywhere. Lots of institutions of your day contain much larger number of books. And this was even before the age of electronic brains, or sometimes I consider them brainless machineries. You can go back to the late 1930s and consider the British Museum. It had over 75 miles of bookshelves. This didn't include the new thrust and writing of the British Zionist Khazarian plan of world conquest in any way. Those were still kept hidden in the subtle archives and catacombs. You weren't going to find the real blueprints back then, but you would be able to find the fragments and the pieces already beginning to come into play. This Alexandrian collection was made up entirely of handwritten works, and for the most part, they were quite unique copies of the greatest antiquity. And each of those today would be worth a king's ransom. But I'm afraid, Chilas, not for the proper reasons, not for truth and content, simply a game valued on the basis of antiquity. It's interesting to note that one couldn't purchase an Alexandrian collection at any price today. There would not be any price big enough to
purchase that kind of antique collection? Is this because of the quality of the knowledge implied here? No. It's because of its antiquity. And the ones getting it, do you think they would let you come in and read it? No. I don't think so. They will interpret again what they want you to have, and they will hide it all. They will not allow you, the people, to touch it. Too valuable to trust into the hands of the mere people. Let's look a minute. You've heard all kinds of stories about this burning of Alexandria's library. Let's look at what really happened. Wasn't like. You've heard it. Not totally. They may pass into it, but you are left with the perception that it was deliberately burned. Well, it wasn't. It was not deliberately burned. I can go farther than that, because actually Caesar didn't give a hang about any library. So let's look at what did happen. Back in the first century B.C., Miss Cleopatra contested with her brother for the throne of Egypt. So what next? Caesar ordered the burning of the fleet in the harbor of Alexandria. And on that day, there was a strong wind after everything was set afire. And the fire got out of control. And it reached the docks. And from there, it just spread rapidly. And before this massive conflagration could be checked, it had already destroyed the Bruchium, as well as, quite frankly, the rest of the city. So now what happens? Miss Cleopatra comes to the city. And then when she entered, finally, with the permission or the favor of Caesar, she decided she better go look over the ruins of this great library. And all she found was a mountain of charred manuscripts and rolls and debris. And this one, who was labeled the Queen of the Sun, cursed all her ancestors that they had not made adequate provision to protect the library from fire. I would say that this sweet little old lady recognized a good antique when she saw one. I really doubt that Cleopatra spent any time at all reading anything. Ones back then did not read precious ones. Well, we all got behind the bad wagon, much as you get behind anything destroyed. And suddenly, you know, the burning of the Bruchium Library was regarded by the Egyptians as a national disaster. And there had to be atonement. Demand atonement for this horrible crime. And so, by way of atonement, Rome presented to Cleopatra several valuable collections of manuscripts which it had accumulated from conquered people. Go into a place, conquer it, rip off their valuable collection of library material, and now we're going to soothe Cleopatra, so we send it on over to Alexandria. And here enters Mark Antony, who was especially active in the restoration of that Bruchium. Well, of course, he was having an affair with Cleopatra. So you can see, as you rebuilt the library, you can see that the new rulers could rewrite history to suit themselves in any context whatsoever and would demand that it be done so. But you're going to have to look at the subsequent destructions of these libraries to get any sense out of it. The great Alexandrian libraries were a second time destroyed by Aurelian in about AD 273. The Serapeum was completely razed by the Christians in AD 389. And this was upon the edict of one Theodosius. How many of you have heard of him? How many of you knew that? What happened to your history books? Why don't you know that? This is presented in history. Why don't you know that? Well, Alexandria never entirely recovered from the third catastrophe. But the love of learning lingered. There are always a few who love knowledge and will seek it and continue to try and be libraries. And then it happened. The last of the great, great collections was entirely wiped out by Amru the Saracen in AD 640. How many of you realize this? Doesn't matter. I guess it depends. Certainly what you have been left with has been a trail of lies. And to your overall freedom, it matters. Maybe Amru the Saracen and the deity of service doesn't matter. But truth matters to you. Because without it, you cannot maintain freedom. And so with these libraries perished the glory, this wonderful glory of the world. The sanctuary of the arts and sciences, gone. The mother of wisdom, gone. And the historians would tell you that knowledge has continued its decline ever since at the hands of the liars and the despots. No, it was already begun to decline. I'm sure if it were asked what humanity has lost through the destruction of the Alexandrian libraries, it would be said that after Alexandria came the Dark Ages. Recognizes the total eclipse of all essential learning. I wouldn't be so kind. For I would project that the Dark Ages came prior to the great and wondrous building of the libraries. Today there are 100 branches of art, science, philosophy, and religion laboring frantically and painfully to restore that which was wrong and incorrect in the first place. How sad when you could be building on truth, you try to reconstruct what was wrong and incorrect in the first instance. And then you get projections from your great scientific scholarly minds that say the lost arts and sciences, the secrets of everlasting pigments, the mystery of malleable glass, the ever-burning lamps, and the transmutation of metals, get this, stated here, are among the losses as stated by modern scholars and actually are listed as minor losses. Minor losses. What in heaven's name, people, is important losses? Transmutation of metals, a minor loss? Oh, wake up. Please, wake up. Because your barn is on fire. And you've locked the door. You've got to open that door. If you're to do anything with your experience here. Let's look at the greater tragedy that happened, though. It would be the loss of the factual fragments of history. Of this antediluvian world, these beginnings of civilization, even the tampered, the myths lost, which did in fact hold fragments of truth, lost for political reasons, just as you are losing it today. All those origins of races, philosophies, religions, and sciences, the accumulated knowledge of this wondrous lost Atlantis. Because, you see, the stories were still written, and they still existed, and herein, in this library of Alexandria, resided those historical memories of Atlantis, and the story of its final destruction and downfall. And who wrote those histories? The Mayans. Don't you find that interesting? And they talk about the destruction, these Mayans, and how Atlantis sank. And in their calculating then and the calculating now, that would come somewhere between 10 to 12,000 or so years past. Just 10 or 12,000 or so years. You don't even survive in a lifespan in your dimension on the average of a century. And we speak in generalities of 10 to 12,000 years. That's 2,000 years in between. I find that interesting. And you wonder how truth can be tarnished? When you can't even speak specifically, except in general terms of 10 to 12,000 years? Well, they speculated on some interesting information. On one night alone, over 60 million of souls moved into transition. On one night. And you're headed there again. If according to the planners in your generation, just along the West Coast, you will lose millions of souls in a single night. And that's without consideration of the millions lost in the decay and degradation of the experience as projected by the Plan 2000. So at any rate, the precious secrets of human origin, to which you have recovered only the faintest clues, vanished. But just as with these congressional investigations into the CIA, banking, etc., things of today, there won't be any truth to be found in those vaults or any other vaults. For when man sets out to hide truth, he destroys. And he arranges that no truth can find its way to the light of day. So you're going to be clinging to the truth we bring. And to that truth which some daring people have compiled for your witness as we pass through the cycle. We have written about these things. Alexander, Alexandria, the Khazars, all in the prior journals. For you've been given lies and not rebirthing of truth.